On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Growing a garden seems so simple. You make sure the plants have sunlight, water, and air, and you make sure the soil has the nutrients it needs. But of course, if you've ever toiled in the soil, you know that gardening seems as much an art as a science. Author Ruth Kassinger fully grasps the art of gardening, and she's written a great book about the fascinating science behind it. For years, she's cared for plants in a conservatory at her home in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Her latest book is called A Garden of Marvels, How We Discovered That Flowers Have Sex, Leaves Eat Air, and Other Secrets of Plants. In it, she unravels how plants thrive and survive. She walks us through how we know what we know about plants and when in history we found out. I spoke with her about it in March. So your book begins with a murder. It's a murder the likes of which many of us who have been gardeners for a while have committed at one time or another. Tell us about that.
Well, I had a favorite kumquat tree, and the kumquat tree was about 5 feet tall, and I'd had it for 5 years. And one summer, I realized that all of the lower leaves on the branches had fallen off, and I thought, I wanted to fluff it out and get it to be more full. And I had watched my husband, who's an outdoor gardener, I'm an indoor gardener, prune some trees and plants in our yard, specifically a crepe myrtle and a row of rose bushes. And he would prune them right back, practically back to the ground. And I thought, oh, well, I like that idea. Yeah, I'll do that too.
Worth a try, right?
Yeah. So I did that. I pruned it pretty radically. And the result was that it died. And I thought, you know, I think I'm missing something. I think I need to look into this more carefully. And I thought, I'm going to learn how plants work so that I can be a better gardener.
Yeah, but you'd come to this not as a scientist, not as a botanist, not as anybody who's, you know, studied molecular biology or plant physiology or anything, right?
No, quite the contrary. I was not a science student or a math student. I was an English arts kinds of person. So that made me realize, though, that to understand science, at least for me, and I suspect many other people, it's great to have stories, stories about people, times, different places, so that the science has context, and it's just generally easier to swallow that way.
Indeed.
So I looked back into history to see how we actually learned how plants work, mm-hmm. and discovered there were some wonderful stories.
And one of your first stories is the story of the boromets, which was this sort of mythical plant. Tell us about the boromets.
Well, the boromets was a plant-animal creature. It really points up the fact that back in the 1600s and before, people had no idea what a plant really was. And the boromets was the translation of the name is vegetable lamb. And it was a plant that people believed grew on the steppes of Central Asia. And out of the center of the plant emerged a stem, and out of the stem emerged a little lamb. And people thought that that was where this wonderful fine white cloth came from, that came from Asia. It was actually cotton, of course, but people believed that you could have a plant that was also an animal.
And how nice, how convenient. You know, you get your two-course dinner right there on the same stalk. That's very nice. And, of course, this goes way, way back. We're talking about ancient Greece here. The first person to talk about this is, or one of the first, is a fellow named Theophrastus, and he's a successor to Aristotle. So this goes way back. People have been trying to deduce things and figure this out from a long time. And you also write a lot about the parallels between plants and animals. Darwin and others have studied these. There are actually more parallels than we might think.
Well, some of the basics are the same. Plants, like animals, need food. They need to reproduce. Plants, by and large, don't move. So that was one of the fundamental differences. And what confused people at the very beginning, when they thought that plants were actually upside-down animals, or animals that had legs that were roots, branches that were arms, and their bodies were the stems. And for a long time, they thought that there were stomachs and hearts in plants, probably in the stem at the juncture with the roots. Since that's where we have our stomach, they thought that would be where the plant has its stomach. And it took a really long time to let go of those analogies that people thought existed.
Ruth Kassinger, her new book is called A Garden of Marvels, How We Discovered That Flowers Have Sex, Leaves Eat Air, and Other Secrets of Plants. Let's talk a little bit about how flowers have sex, because Darwin and others have thought about this. You actually write, you make an interesting point that after The Origin of the Species was published in 1859, Darwin turned his pretty much full attention to the study of plants. And if Origin of the Species had never been written, we'd know Darwin today as a great botanist. That's interesting that he was so fascinated by this.
Yes, he had always been interested in plants, and one of the first images we have of Darwin is as a 5 or 6 year old holding a big blue pot of flowers. He had grown up on a farm, and his mother and father were great horticulturalists and had an orchard where they crossed and hybridized apple trees.
Yeah. So Darwin's theory of evolution, natural selection, doesn't actually hold up if the fact is that plants don't have sex with each other. Right. It's all long been thought that plants have sex with themselves to reproduce. But Darwin was one of the first folks to question that notion, and it had to do with the work he had done on Origin of the Species.
Right, and I think a lot of people, including, I have to say, me for some time, thought, you can look into a flower and you see two organs there. You see pistils, which are the female organs, and stamens, which are the male, and they look can often look very similar. But the pollen comes from the stamen and goes to the pistil, where it pollinates, fertilizes the ovary. And most people thought that since the two organs were so close together in a flower, that a flower pollinated itself. Darwin was the one who realized that if that were so, then there wouldn't be much natural variety, because it would just be identical plants.
Everything would reproduce exactly the same.
So he was the one who really figured that there must be something more going on here, and understood that pollination by insects and also by wind crosses plants.
All right. So this is where the birds and the bees enter the picture.
Yes.
But he also found out that the way they were pollinating and the reasons, the particular plants that a bee, you talk a lot about the orchids and certain orchids attract and kind of trick bees into pollinating them, even though they have nothing to offer in return. It's a very strange dating scene between the orchids and the bees, isn't it?
Yes, there are two elements to this. One is that the orchids are, there are a huge variety of them, about 50,000 species. And each one is designed in such a way as to attract a pollinator that will come in and pick up the pollen on one part of its body, fly to another orchid, and drop it off on the female part of the other orchid. Sometimes the attraction is by scent, or sometimes by the shape of the flower. But there are some orchids that think, not that they think really, but they have decided through evolution that it's a waste of time and energy to produce a scent, which is expensive for an orchid to make, and so they trick a bee to coming, and they trick a bee to come thinking that it's going to get something interesting like nectar, and in fact, there's no nectar there. The bee thinks it's actually copulating with another bee just because of the way the orchid is designed.
If only that kind of efficiency could be applied to, you know, the bars of Fells Point and Adams Morgan, you know, we'd have a very different situation going on here these days, wouldn't we? You talk a little bit about the very important topic of genetic modification of plants. Mm-hmm. And you write that, you know, back in the 90s, it seemed like this was, you know, flat out going to be the wave of the future. This is how things were going to proceed. But it hasn't really turned out that way. There's been a lot of resistance.
There has. And in the book, I talk to some people who grow petunias. And there's an interesting way these days of providing different scents, smells for petunias. And you could, for example, have a pink and green petunia that has a mint scent. And you could do this really easily these days with a little genetic modification. But the regulations, and you know, there's a good discussion to be had about this, the regulations against genetic modifications of plants or to make it more safe are very expensive to adhere to. So in petunias, although you could genetically modify them, the breeding process is still the old-fashioned crossing male and female plants.
Mm-hmm. And of course, petunias are one thing, but the stuff that we're ingesting is another thing. Where do you think this is all headed?
Well, you know, it's such a political football. I personally think that there are some great opportunities out there for genetic modification. There is a rice called golden rice, which has three new genes inserted into it, two from a marigold. By inserting those genes, the children who eat the rice or others get the precursors of vitamin A, and about 500,000 children around the world go blind every year because they don't get enough vitamin A, and these are children in Asia who eat rice on a regular basis. The rice has been tested, the golden rice has been tested for 15 years now, but it's still not out there in the fields. It could save lives and save a lot of misery.
Mm-hmm. So you write that the study of plants has shifted away from physiology to molecular biology. So there's a shift in the way we're looking at plants. Where do you think plant science and plant study is headed?
I think it's headed toward the microbiological side. Our ability to look into the genomes of plants, to arrange, either rearrange what we see there, add things, or heighten the effects of some genes is going to make a huge difference in our future.
Ruth Kassinger, the book is called A Garden of Marvels, How We Discovered That Flowers Have Sex, Leaves Eat Air, and Other Secrets of Plants. We've got a link to more information at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for being with us.
Maryland Morning is an original production of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore.
The program is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. I'm Tom Hall. I'm the culture editor.
We have production help from Brandon Block, Alexandra Kennedy, and Justina Latimer. Coffee provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville on the web at zekescoffee.com.
You can find us online at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. You can leave a comment about something you've heard or make a suggestion about an interview you think you should hear on our show.
On 88.1 WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. The whole Maryland Morning team is glad you're listening. Have a great weekend.